but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a .08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a .08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
You've got the home of the truth. Back to the bald-faced truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
We got a Kentucky Derby coming up, but first we're going to take a couple phone calls. Dick Girardi, longtime columnist at the Philadelphia Daily News, will be with us momentarily. We've been talking about Shedeur Sanders. Mike in Portland's called in. Mike, what's up, man?
So, man, John, I want to connect the dots for what's really going on with Shedeur, man.
Okay.
It's bigger than Shedeur. He's just a tool. The reason what they're doing is they're attacking Deion. If what Deion is doing, first of all, is he's putting the NFL on Front Street because they didn't hire him. The NFL has a bad record on hiring black coaches. Now, what Deion did is, in Colorado, he has hired 3 or 4 Hall of Famers. These are all black guys that probably wanted to coach in the NFL but never got a chance. So what he's doing is he's showing what black coaches can really do if given a chance. He's doing it at Colorado. So what that's doing is that's making the NFL look bad. And also, the reason the NFL didn't draft Shedeur until last, another reason is they want to destroy Deion's opportunity to recruit, because that's hurting his ability to recruit, because football players are saying, well, man, if his son can't go higher, why should we go to Colorado? He can't even get his own son now. So they...
How do you explain Travis Hunter, though? Because he went high, and that could be held up as, hey, look, you go play for Coach Prime, and you have a lot of talent. There's a place for you in the NFL.
Well, they couldn't do Travis Hunter like that because he's a Heisman Trophy. They had to draft him. Shedeur ain't a Heisman Trophy winner. I'm telling you, John, that it's like what Jimmy the Greek said, man. You got to go back and listen to Jimmy the Greek. Jimmy the Greek said that black athletes are taking all the positions in the NFL, and the only positions that it remains for white people or white guys, however you want to put it, is management. Okay. Jimmy the Greek said that. That is why you see today that in the NFL, there ain't a lot of black coaches, although 70% of the football players are black. So the NFL colluded to attack Deion's program.
Isn't the problem that Shedeur wasn't good enough? Like, Travis Hunter was so good, teams went, we got to draft him. The NFL GMs, they don't want to get fired, Mike. Like, if you can play, they're going to pick you. They don't care if you have domestic violence. They don't care if you you park while backing in or front end. They if you can play, they're picking you.
John, what you're saying is true. They don't the type of characters you just named, that's true. Especially they don't mind hiring a black guy that has a bad character, that fits that stereotype. They're going to hire them kind of guys. Shedeur don't have any problems. Shedeur is clean cut. What it is Shedeur has his father's temperament, the where he's not bound down, man. He's unapologetic. He's like his daddy, and they don't like that, man. So they're trying to break him.
Okay.
That's what's going on, John.
I think Shedeur is good enough to be about a third or fourth round pick. I think the entitlement cost him that. And I think I don't think he would have gone 144th. I think he should have probably been somewhere in the 85 to 100 range based on his talent. But I think the act itself, GMs went, eh, it's not worth it. And there's some good players here I can pick that aren't going to be a headache. We got a Kentucky Derby coming up. And every year we bring on Dick Girardi, national horse racing reporter and columnist at the Philadelphia Daily News. 39 years of experience as a handicapper. He's won every horse racing journalism award known to mankind, including his coverage on, in 2006. And he's covered every Triple Crown race since 1987, every Breeders' Cup race since 1986. He is joining us now to talk about the Kentucky Derby. Dick Girardi, welcome to the program. Are they talking about Shedeur Sanders out at the track right now? He's talking about him everywhere.
It might be the only place they're not talking about him,
John. Let's go there.
Right. Yeah, right? Let's all go to the track. Yeah, they want to know who's going to win the next race out there.
How is this Derby shaping up in your mind compared to maybe some others in history? And you've done them all.
Yeah, it's a good group to be determined how good journalism will be the favorite. And don't we love a horse named Journalism at this stage of our lives?
Let's do it.
And he's won four in a row. He's been very impressive in his two wins this year. Both buyer speed figures over 100+, which are big numbers for a three-year-old in the spring. So, yeah, he's very logical. Nothing not to like about him. The rider doesn't have a lot of big race experience. The trainer does. Hasn't won the Derby yet, but he's got enough good horses. He's probably going to win it soon. I mean, he's the headliner. The other big story is the fact that Bob Baffert has returned after the three-year suspension by Churchill Downs where he couldn't run at any of their tracks. Most importantly, couldn't run a horse in the Derby. He's back with two horses. So that automatically makes it a big deal that Baffert, who's won six Derbies, is back to see if he can get number seven.
If Baffert wins or doesn't win, will that overshadow, do you think, what's going on really with the horses? Or is that going to be the story?
If he wins, it unquestionably will be the story. Hey, he was gone for 3 years. Now he's back, and he will have gotten a record seventh Derby, which you remember, John, he actually got 4 years ago for a month or so with Medina Spirit till he ended up getting disqualified, which was it's a long, complicated story, but that's the reason he got the long suspension from Churchill Downs. But, yeah, certainly it would be a gigantic comeback story if he wins. I don't happen to like either of his horses. That doesn't mean they can't win because weird stuff happens in this race every year.
We talk in football, especially in college football, about how money has changed the sport. You've been around this sport for a long time. Let's go back to like the 80s and then compare it to what's going on now. How has money changed horse racing?
Well, it's interesting you mentioned the 80s because that was the era where the really high-priced yearlings started at Keeneland in Kentucky started to get purchased on a regular basis. I mean, horses for $3, $4, $5, $7, even $10, $12 million. So that changed it because all of a sudden all these rich people, and I mean like ridiculously rich people, started to dominate the game. And that's kind of still happened. What's happened now, John, is at the top end of the sport, which are most of the horses in the Derby, a number of conglomerates, for want of a better word, are getting together and outbidding everybody on these top pedigrees. So then they end up running a lot of the best horses in these races. So it's changed in that way that there's much more big money in it than was in it prior to the 80s.
Does that hurt the sport? Does it help the sport? Often there's a balance or a blend of the two.
Yeah, it's a great question. Like, one of the cool things is, even with that, you can get a horse like Smarty Jones 21 years ago, who was a homebred. People were trying to get out of the game. A Fleet Alex 20 years ago, who was purchased for $75,000 and was beating horses that were purchased for $3 and $4 million. So it's no guarantee, but it's not unlike professional sports, right? The teams that spend the most money, certainly in baseball, generally win. And that's true in horse racing too. But the cool thing is it doesn't necessarily have to be that way. Every once in a while, the little guy will win.
Dick Girardi with us. Jockeys in this Kentucky Derby, like I often will look, and for years I saw Calvin Burrell. I went, don't count his horse out. Who do you like among the jockeys at Churchill Downs?
Well, yeah, you have the Ortiz brothers, Irad and Jose. They're two of the four or five best in the country, and neither has yet to win the Derby. They've won everything else. They're going to win at some point. They're not really on particularly live horses this year. I would say Jose's on a more live horse. He's on the Sandman, the Arkansas Derby winner, than Irad. Irad's on a real long shot, so not sure if he's going to be able to get his first Derby win. But Johnny Velasquez is one of the dominant riders. Mike Smith is back trying again. A lot of familiar names that people are aware of trying to go back and to try to win the Derby for the first time or try to win it again.
The Triple Crown becomes such a big thing. And, you know, 17 years, you know, you look at the Triple Crown and you give analysis now. You've been doing this around the country plus 39 years in the business. Do we have a Triple Crown candidate here in the field?
I think journalism might be. Now, obviously, he's got to win on Saturday or there's no Triple Crown. But he's the son of Curlin, who was a two-time Horse of the Year. You look at him, you just say, he's not like as big as, say, Justify, who won the Triple Crown in 2018. But he gives that kind of aura a little bit, that he might be stout enough to win 3 in 5 weeks. And that's obviously the hard part, to maintain your form through that. But yeah, I think journalism, and it's interesting, there's a bunch of prop bets at betonline.ag, yeah. And I want to give out one that my particular favorite. It's over-under on the lengths of the horse that wins will win by, and it's a length and a half. I think journalism is going to win big, John, and so I would take the over. That's a 50-50 proposition. And if for some reason he doesn't win, you get the other 19. If any one of them wins by a length and a half, you could still win the bet.
BetOnline.ag is the site you referenced there. I love that. I just looked at one of their prop bets. Which trainer will be suspended first in 2025 is an actual prop bet on the board. All right, yep. That can't be good for the sport, can it, Dick?
No.
Think that we know that.
No, it's not something you want. But yeah, you know what? That's the fun of prop bets, right? You can have all kind of wild stuff. One of the prop bets they have is a rider or a horse ending in Z will win the race. So you get Rodriguez the horse, you get the Ortiz brothers, you get John Velasquez, you get Brian Hernandez the jockeys, and Nick Juarez. So you get six jockeys and a horse, and basically you get six horses. That's a fun prop, too.
Right now on the board, journalism is at 3-1 favorite. Sovereignty at 6-1. Sandman right after that. Luxor Cafe. Burnham Square. Help us out for non-horse people. You know, the names of these horses become so fascinating as the Derby approaches, and people will bet on a horse based on the name, Dick. You know that.
Yep.
Do you have stories that you've heard over the years about how they arrive at some of the different names? Like, I'm dying to know how Luxor Cafe got its name.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that one. I can tell you from personal experience. So Smarty Jones is a PA bred. Obviously, that was a huge story for us at the paper. And he was just voted last week into the National Hall of Fame. His name came because the owner, Pat Chapman's mother's nickname, was Smarty Jones. That's where the name came from. That's how she named the horse. So and a lot of times, It's a play on the actual mother and father of the horse. If you look at some of the horses in the Derby this year, you'll see that happens. Like I'm trying to look around. Yeah, like American Pharaoh is the sire of Luxor Cafe. So Luxor sounds like a little like that's a casino in
yeah,
Vegas,
and,
right?
It's got, that's the got pyramid. That's the pyramid one. It's the
got,
yeah.
Exactly. Right, so it's got some of that American Pharaoh, so that, I assume that's where they came up with that name. But yeah, a lot of times journalism's name came because the one of the owners, you know, love this one, was the sports editor of his college newspaper.
There you go.
So that's where journalism came from.
And they down one of the long shots, publisher at 33-1. Do you have a long shot? Anybody 20-1 or greater that you like? Just take a flyer on.
Yeah, I'll give you the three. Final Gambit. The issue there, John, is he's only run on the artificial surfaces and on the grass. He hasn't been on the main dirt track yet. But his last race was sensational. He won the Jeff Ruby Stakes at Turfway Park, which is just right near the Cincinnati Airport in northern Kentucky. It was such an awesome race, and he's 30-1, and he's got a pedigree that suggests he'll like the dirt, and you watch his workouts, he looks okay. He wouldn't be my first choice, but yeah, if you're looking for a long shot that maybe can be in the top three or four of the three final damage.
I always like that, you know, to take a couple of horses, like a horse like Journalism, and stick it with a horse like Final Gambit and box that Exacta and see what happens.
That's going to be a big number. You're talking a couple $100 for two. Yeah. If that thing hits. And that's the cool thing about a 20-horse field. It's harder, obviously, to hit, but if you do, the prices just go up, can be astronomical.
Now, look, we're talking again with Dick Girardi, Philadelphia Daily News, for so many years as the horse racing columnist and reporter, and this is a guy who's been all around horse racing over the last 40 years. When you talk about a race that's got 20 entries, how does that affect the jockeys, the horses, everything that goes into it? Because we all will pore over the racing forum and we'll say, okay, last time out, but then, you know, the last time out maybe there was 8 horses in the race, you know. So how does, when you get to a field of 20, how does that impact the race itself?
It definitely complicates it. I mean, I've made the analogy that it'd be like playing, this is the biggest race of the sport, right? It'd be like playing the Super Bowl with 12 or 13 on the side. I don't like the fact that they have 20. Every other race in America is limited to 14. But in Kentucky, in the Derby, there's just so many people that want to run, they've decided they'll allow 6 more. I think it's basically, I'm concerned, John, every year I hold my breath through the first, first time, that there's going to be an accident, because there's just all these jockeys are not familiar with this circumstance. It only happens once a year. So that's my concern. But when you're handicapping it and you look at it, you can't worry about that, because it's not something you can control anyway. You don't know what's going to happen. Just to look at it like it's another race and then try to get a sense, where's my horse going to be? Will he be affected if he's too far back? Stuff like that. All the normal fundamental stuff. But yeah, it is crazy that in the most significant race in the country every year, we basically change the rules.
Is that because you're paying so much to enter? Like, you know, they're not going to turn you down. They want as many many of those starting gates filled as possible.
That's my theory. I mean, it's 6 extra entrants. It's people are buying seats. They're getting their friends and family are coming. There's more hotel rooms. Not that they wouldn't sell them all out anyway, but yeah, and look, I get where Churchill Downs is coming from. They could have 30 in this race if they took that many. There are people that want to get in that can't get in, but I just think it would be better if they would just limit it to 14. But I don't expect that's going to happen anytime soon.
The you know, the idea that you're going to have 20 in this race, and is there a post position where you start to go, that really becomes a factor when they get out too wide? Or is it in the middle where you worry? You know, where do you, you know, ideally, where do these jockeys and trainers want their horse?
Yeah, typically, I would say it's going to sound counterintuitive, but the higher the number, the better. And the reason, if you think about it, you're less likely to encounter traffic out there, because it's a pretty long run to the first turn, where it's a quarter mile from the starting gate just to the finish line, and then you got another couple hundred yards before you actually get to the turn. So from that standpoint, like American Pharoah was the 18. So it's not unusual for horses with those numbers to win. So generally, I would say that's the case. Where you really have issues, and one of Baffert's horses has it in this race, Citizen Bowl, who's the two-year-old champ, he has the one hole. They don't really have any options. He's fast, and they got to go. They can't, like, say, all right, if this happens, we'll do this. They really don't have a choice, because if they don't send him out to the front or try to get to the front, he's going to get locked in. And this is a horse that's a free-running horse. And if he's behind 10 horses after a quarter mile, you can forget it. He's got no chance.
Do the other trainers like Baffert, or do they tolerate him, and are they nice to his face? You're at the track, you know.
I think he and Wayne Lucas are very good friends. Now, Wayne, of course, is everybody's favorite grandfather. He's 89 now. They're good friends. I think Bob does have some pretty good friends at the track, and there's obviously some other people that are jealous of his success and maybe don't don't like some of the antics through the years. So, yeah, there's some of that. It's like anybody anybody in any sport that does well, there will be jealousy. That's just how it is.
Dick Girardi, I appreciate you. BetOnline.ag if you want to check out those prop bets. Thank you for joining us, and we will talk to you. Let's talk to you in front of the next big race, Triple Crown ahead.
Look forward to it. 2 weeks of the Preakness, John. Can't wait to chat.
All right, there's Dick Girardi. It'll be the Kentucky Derby, and then the Preakness and the Belmont, of course, if there is a Triple Crown run. 4-1 right now, Stephen, that there will be a Triple Crown winner this year. So keep an eye on those odds. I've been to Churchill Downs. It's kind of cool. And it's not the hats. The mint julep is a garbage drink. That's not it. To me, it was walking up to the gates of Churchill Downs and seeing the spires, those pointy spires pointing towards the heavens. It was the bugle as they are announcing the early races. And by the way, the Kentucky Derby, you know, is just one of many races that are raced that day at Churchill Downs. And then it's people watching, and it's walking over to the paddock, and it's just sort of the idea that you are somewhere where they've done this for more than 100 years, and you just kind of feel the excitement and the electricity, and it's a big race. And then, you know, you got to wait through like 5 or 6 races before the actual Kentucky Derby happens. And then the place clears out like somebody pulled the fire alarm. And so I've been to the Kentucky Derby. I've been to the Belmont. I've never been to the Preakness. I like horse racing. I like being around horse racing people. I don't trust the trainers any farther than I can throw them. The jockeys, you could talk about motorsports and the race car drivers having courage. The jockeys are about as ferocious and fearless as I've ever seen. Like you look at the size of the animals and the speed at which they are running and the traffic. And then you look at little Calvin Burrell or, you know, the Ortiz brothers, and you're like, wow, they're out there on it with mud flying in their face, racing these things, hanging on for their dear life. It's a pretty cool event. And it, you know, it's 2 minutes. They say it's the greatest 2 minutes in sports. But I know we tune in every year. We watch it. The kids love watching it. We all pick horses and we let it rip. Keep it here. You got the BFT.